Pot Stir Podcast, where politics, religion, and history collide, and it's not always polite. As those of you who have listened to Pot Stir Podcast from the beginning know, I became a Christian my first year at The Ohio State University and first came to Christ in the evangelical movement. I met some awesome, spirit-filled people while in college and had some memorable times. I have many great memories and some less than fond ones, but overall, those 4 years at Ohio State were some of the most enjoyable years of my life. Back in those days, I remember good conversations with friends and associates about religion, of course, but also politics, race and ethnicity, and other topics the polite among us tend to shy away from. It was fascinating learning other people's perspectives, and it gave me an understanding of where different people are coming from. It was the genesis of what later became the topic of my doctoral dissertation. My dissertation was focused on why white evangelicals and black Protestants tend to view issues like homosexuality and, to a degree, abortion pretty similarly, but politically affiliate and vote differently. The data showed that the divergence in their views were not on personal morality issues, but on social morality issues. Solutions to poverty, racial and ethnic discrimination, things like that. There's more to the dissertation, of course, but a key finding was that race is the primary driver to voting and political affiliation, not only for blacks, but for whites. Religion merely emphasizes what is already there. I was like an academic hipster because my research explained 2016 several years early. I'm your host, Jay Poole. We're in a strange period of time, folks. The hashtag MeToo movement has outed powerful figures in Hollywood, entertainment, the mainstream media, and politics for sexual misconduct. On the political front, Democratic leaders Al Franken and John Conyers have resigned, but the Republicans, for their part, stand by their predators. Donald Trump, the alleged predator-in-chief, has endorsed Roy Moore for U.S. Senate. The Republican Party has gone back to pouring resources into the race on behalf of Roy Moore. And white evangelicals in Alabama have stood by Roy Moore. So for the Republican Party and much of white evangelicalism, it's better to elect an alleged child molester than a Democrat. And power is more important than truth. We're in a strange period in time. Donald Trump, our glorious leader, wants to move the United States Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Many evangelicals are cheering this move because Jerusalem plays a central role in end times theology. But they seem to miss that in end times theology, the person engineering this is the Antichrist. I'm not sure how many of these evangelicals who are thrilled with the idea that Trump may be triggering the apocalypse have realized that if this is true, they're supporting the Antichrist and they aren't going to be the ones raptured in the last days. We're living in a strange period of time. Many would call it the post-truth era. The powerful who control our social media feel that allowing bots and foreign agents to spread misinformation on Twitter, Facebook, and elsewhere is more important than any duty to do the right thing. The powerful who control our mainstream media is more invested in covering both sides as if they are equivalent than telling the truth. In the 1960s, when children were being sprayed with fire hoses and attacked by police dogs in the South, the mainstream media covered this, and many white Americans were horrified. In today's world, the mainstream media would cover this as a both-sides horse race. And I wonder how many people would find a way, then, to blame the children for not respecting law and order or causing it themselves by marching in the streets. Or worse yet, blaming their parents for sending them out there in the first place. But we need to remember that this is not normal. None of this is normal, and we should never accept this because the truth always matters. Here's a good barometer for where we are at in this country, especially from those who claim moral and spiritual enlightenment. According to a PRRI Brookings poll, survey participants were asked if they agreed with the statement, an elected official who commits an immoral act in their personal life can still behave ethically and fulfill their duties in their public and professional life. In 2011, only 30% of white evangelicals agreed with this statement. In 2016, 72% agreed with this statement. In only 5 years, this was a jump of 42%, higher than any other group sampled. So what happened? Donald Trump happened. Over 80% of white evangelical voters cast their ballots for Donald Trump last year, the same bloc that said that Bill Clinton was unfit for the office of the presidency for carrying on an affair with his intern, which was indeed problematic on many levels, were then willing to accept a builder of gambling dens and strip clubs, a serial adulterer who had been married 3 times and divorced 2x, and bragged about sexual assault for the same exact office. Folks, we need to understand something. The American church, particularly American conservative evangelicalism, is on very shaky ground. And because not enough of these churches are willing to challenge the prevailing views of their congregants, those at the top are failing to exercise leadership. They are in a spiritually perilous situation, and this is why. In Romans 1, verses 16 through 32, Paul writes, and this will be long, I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew, then to the Greek. For the gospel reveals the righteousness of God that comes by faith from start to finish, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. For what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from his workmanship, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and darkened in their foolish hearts. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images of mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them up in the desires of their hearts to impurity for the dishonoring of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever worthy of praise. Amen. For this reason, God gave them over to dishonorable passions. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones. Likewise, the men abandoned natural relations with women and burned with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men, and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Furthermore, since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, he gave them up to a depraved mind, to do what should not be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and hatred. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent new forms of evil. They disobey their parents. They are senseless, faithless, heartless, merciless. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things are worthy of death, they not only continue to do these things, but also approve of those who practice them. Conservative evangelicals have used this passage for many, many years to condemn LGBT people by isolating the verses pertaining to dishonorable passions. I think we need to understand that much of the way homosexuality was viewed in those days was in the context of idolatry. Orgies were often enjoyed in worship of deities other than Yahweh during this time period. This is not about committed same-sex couples, but regardless of how that one segment is interpreted, I read the whole passage because the entire context of what Paul is saying is very important. He's talking about those who have knowledge but embrace sin, who exchange the truth of God for a lie. You see, in the rush to grab the mantle of power by any means necessary, the truth matters. And the rejection of truth matters. Yet in that moment, God is not smiting them or otherwise making them suffer. He is giving them over to their sin. Conservative evangelicals, if you feel a sense of triumph because you supported Donald Trump and he became president, if you feel relieved that the resurgence of white nationalism allows you to embrace stereotypes about people who don't look like you, speak like you, or worship like you without being labeled a racist or a bigot, if you feel you now have voices and seats of power that validate your worldview, please consider for a moment that the lack of suffering you're experiencing might be God's way of giving you over to your basest desires. Do not take the lack of negative outcomes for God's providence. Potstirrer Podcast will be back after this. Did you know for today's episode? The internet age has spawned various avenues for reaching people, and even those on the other side of the world are just a fingertip away on social media platforms such as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and others. But while globalization has made the world seem smaller, politics is still local. Social media platforms are often used by political figures to get their message out in real time, crafted the way they see fit. These apps are also used by constituents to reach out to their representatives to provide feedback, positive, neutral, or negative. But did you know that many elected officials in the United States block their own constituents on social media? And it's not just Donald Trump. Many federal, state, and local officials from both major parties engage in blocking constituents that either voice political disagreement or ask them questions about their stances on political issues that make them uncomfortable. According to ProPublica, governors and federal agencies are blocking nearly 1,300 accounts on Twitter and Facebook. And when you include the president, Congress, and other state and local officials, this number could be much higher. Now, of course, some could be bots, though ProPublica reported that most of the accounts they could investigate were likely human. The accounts they can investigate is key because when attempting to determine just how widespread profile blocking is, the challenge is that open records laws vary by location and position. These laws don't apply to the White House. Also, some states exempt certain positions, such as Michigan, that exempts the governor and state legislature from freedom of information laws. Other states have stipulations such as requiring the requester to be a state resident in order to obtain information. So there's really no way of knowing for sure how many Americans are losing social media access to their elected leaders. So what is the problem with this? There are a couple of issues. One is that for many constituents, social media is one of the few ways citizens are able to directly communicate with their officials. In an age where many congressional representatives, for example, are loath to have in-person town halls, to block those they represent in yet another form is essentially stifling their freedom of speech and telling their constituents that they do not represent them. The other issue is that by blocking dissenters, elected officials are creating a false image of their actual support. In other words, cultivating their social media as propaganda and manipulation rather than as a way to communicate more effectively with those they represent. Both of these issues lead us in a frighteningly undemocratic direction. If these officials won't show up to town halls and choose to isolate themselves from any negative feedback or difficult questions, why do we keep voting for them? Now, back to Pot Stirrer Podcast. When I've had conversations with conservative Christians over the years, both while in college and beyond, what I could never understand was how the Bible could be interpreted as being hyper-individualistic, deeply concerned with sex, but not so much with economics and people's felt needs, especially those of the poor. A lot was made of the poor in spirit, so that those with a great deal of wealth and privilege could be shoehorned into how Bible passages regarding the poor were interpreted. Government solutions were key to keeping people from having access to abortions or to keep gays and lesbians from getting married, because we're supposed to be a Christian nation. But government solutions were bad for doing things like providing poor people with homes, food, or health care, because the church should do that. But I've yet to see the church provide a comprehensive solution to health care for all, except to tell poor people to put the Lord our God to the test. Or in other words, pray for God to heal you because I don't want my tax dollars spent to let you live. I cannot speak for other religions or for the unaffiliated, so it would not be right to speak on those belief systems in regards to this, but I can speak in regards to Christianity. Within the Bible, there is a great deal of emphasis on truth. The truth shall set you free. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And my favorite verse, John 4:24. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth. Of course, there is the big truth, Christ. But then the small truth, the embracing of what is real and actual, is a part of that. The truth versus the lie. The lie is opposite of both concepts of truth. The name evangelical describes the call to spread the good news. This is what Christians are called to do, but how can you be a good witness if you embrace power and demagoguery, leading to the oppression of others, over the humility Christ modeled and taught? How can you tell other people to embrace Christ, but then exchange the truth for a lie? Even if you try to scare people into becoming Christian, saying things like, "You're going to hell," why should they believe you if you also believe our country's leader, who openly and unashamedly lies compulsively, should be believed and embraced because at least he's not a dirty liberal? You lost credibility. Many people grew up in the church and heard a lot about truth and integrity from the pulpit. I talked to a number of people that are like that, and there are a number of people that have talked about this on social media. I came to Christ as an adult, but I, and I'm sure many others who came of age in evangelicalism, can say this. But many of us, those who left evangelical but are still Christian, those who have left the faith altogether, and even some who remain, can see that conservative evangelicalism as a movement has embraced the lie. And when you embrace the lie, you lose credibility. It terminates your witness. And the sad thing is, few within the conservative evangelical community have people that can call them to account. These contradictions are all too often being taught at the highest levels by leadership who typically lack accountability. At the time I was researching available data and writing my dissertation, so around the late 2000s, early 2010s, and even now, churches tend to be highly segregated. I believe that's a huge reason why I was able to uncover the findings I did. And unlike higher education, churches are often a place where commonly held views are reinforced, not challenged. As we can see with accused pedophile and slavery apologist Roy Moore and the support he receives among white evangelical Christians, it is easy to ignore uncomfortable truths. like the evangelical church supporting a man most sane people would not want to leave their kids around. Or the evangelical church claiming a desire to diversify their congregations while embracing a removed judge who believes the best time in American history was when black people were considered farm animals, but you could violate them. It's easy to ignore uncomfortable truths when you dismiss those who speak those truths as being outsiders, or worse yet, adversaries. But Christianity at its core is an Eastern religion that sprouted in the context of a minority ethnic group in the Middle East who were being oppressed by the world power of that time. Christianity only becomes comfortable, hyper-individualistic, oppressive to outsiders, and devoid of its revolutionary power if all context is stripped away and the faith is recast in the image of the most powerful group living in the world power of today. You cannot embrace both Christ and the pursuit of power. Make your choice. Check out our website today, PotSquarePodcast.com, for previous episodes, special presentations, announcements, merch, and all things Pot Stirrer Podcast. You can find our show on iTunes, Google Play, and most other podcatchers. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, give us 5 stars, leave a review, share, and tell your friends. Thank you for listening and supporting Pot Stirrer Podcast. I'm Jay Poole. Let's fight for America's future, because freedom is not free.